My name is Hugh McLeod. This is Kathy Sierra. This is Gabe Rivera. This is David Parmet. Thanks for coming. For the record, I actually went to University of Texas, and I drew cartoons for the Austin Chronicle. And this is my
pandering.
This is my first visit back to Austin in about 8 years.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks everybody for coming. So, David Parmet is the moderator. So let's get him started.
We should get started. Okay. I want to thank all of you for deciding to blow up Bruce Sterling and come here. I know I will be introducing the panelists and then going to see Bruce Sterling, but nevertheless, this panel is Global Microbrands, Are Suits, Wine, and Blogs the New Sex, Drug, and Rock and Roll? And I actually prefer the title Because Real Jobs Suck, and I think that's something we can... Thank you. So I want to introduce our panelists very quickly, and then as a good moderator, I'm going to ask a few questions and get out of the way. But to my immediate left, Gabe Rivera of TechMeme, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's where all of us bloggers go every Sunday afternoon to figure out what we're going to write about to kind of juice up our traffic. All the way at the end, we have Kathy Sierra, author of the absolutely fantastic Creating Passionate Users blog. And in the middle, we have some guy named Hugh. Since Hugh is the author of the notion or gave title to the notion of the global microbrand, I'm going to ask you to start and give a definition.
Hi. Global microbrand is basically a small business, a small brand that, unlike most small businesses, instead of doing local community stuff like a pizza or a barbecue restaurant or a mom and pop shop, it actually has a global community of customers and users and people who care about them. Now, as a blogger, it's tempting to think that you couldn't have that before the invention of the internet. That's actually not true. There's a really wonderful gun company to make shotguns called Holland & Holland in London, where I live. And if you got $80,000 or $120,000 to spend on a shotgun, you talk to them. And they're really nice. That's why they cost $120,000. But the thing is with them is their reputation is worldwide, and pretty much any kind of like upper class shotgun geek buys a gun from them eventually, because they really are the Chateau Lafitte of shotguns. They only make 200 shotguns a year. And they only got so many employees, and for whatever reason, they decided they don't want to grow their business. They like it a certain size. Now, they are growing their business in other ways, such as tweed jackets and, you know, picnic hampers and stuff like that, kind of all that kind of Brooks Brothers stuff. But, you know, their guns are what they are. And they've been around for about 200 years. But now, to my mind, because of blogs, you don't have to wait 200 years, and you don't have to make shotguns. I think a bit of an anecdote. When I went to University of Texas... In 1986, for whatever reason, the market fell out of the oil business, and anyone who was at university looking for a summer job in Austin was in deep shit because nobody was hiring. And then I went and lived in New York and worked in advertising, and every now and then something bad would happen in Madison Avenue, and then the bottom would fall out of the market, and all of a sudden I found myself out of work again. And so when the blogs came around, I figured out pretty much how to make global microbrands using blogs and the internet. And as a result, two things happened. One, I'm very, very, very recession proof because I've got income streams coming all over the planet, which I like because that's great. And the second thing is because of the community I've been able to build with the blogs, and, you know, Kathy's been able to build with her shtick and Gabe and Dave.
Shtick.
Yeah,
it's a Yiddish word meaning day job.
Yeah, the great thing is somebody. I don't have a boss anymore, and if nobody can tell me what to do, because I've got a constituency of several thousand people. Some give me money, some don't, but it's okay. I've got this kind of global network of people that I can just tap into, and hopefully give them something back in return. And it's the most marvelous. Thing ever for me, because I think what's gotten people interested in this whole global microbrand idea or the blog idea so isn't so much about how easy it is to make a buck, because I still work 18 hours a day. I think the key is freedom and personal sovereignty, and I think that's what drives us all, and that's why we're here. And I think if we weren't governed by that, we'd be doing something else. So thank you.
Gabe, how does TechMeme fit in with the notion of the global microbrand?
Well, so TechMeme is fueled by people's global microbrands. So TechMeme's, you know, just an automated news site that's supposed to give a rundown of like the hottest tech news stories. And something you'd expect of a news site is a lot of news articles from, you know, journalists and, you know, New York Times and CNN. And there's a lot of that on TechMeme, but there are these other kinds of people who aren't really trying to report the news, but, you know, are involved in activities that further their careers. And some of them are in companies, maybe with sucky jobs, but there's this identity to them that transcends their job, and it's something that can, you know, something that can translate into, you know, excellent future opportunities and you know, maybe great personal ventures down the road. Anyway, this effect is great for TechMeme because, you know, a lot of these people are, you know, have great firsthand knowledge. A lot of them have an axe to grind, which is, you know, as if it's open, it can make the news interesting. So some examples, you know, so Robert Scoble is an excellent example of this. He has a global microbrand that has followed him from Fawcett Technical Publications to Userland Software to NEC to Microsoft, now to PodTech. And you know, he had this article on TechMeme, "Your Exit Interview of Me," in which he kind of summed. It was this like magna opus. It's summing up all this stuff he observed at Microsoft. Only someone in Microsoft could have done this. You know, it's like, you know, all these clues for the future of Microsoft and all this, you know, interesting stuff was in there. And you know, this is posted as a Microsoft employee, but also posted to, of course, it was him advancing his personal brand and made for great content. So moving on to the next one. So another great thing was when Jeremy Zawadny and Matt Cutts, both Yahoo employee and Google employee, kind of got into a little war over Jeremy said Google was copying. Jeremy pointed out how Google had copied a splash page that Yahoo had for their personalized browser and just changed some terms to make it a Yahoo page. And then Matt Cutts comes back with how Yahoo has copied Google's ad style. And it was fascinating. Gave an inside account of what it's like to compete in these companies. And they come out as like the voice of these companies, even though that's not their official job. So you know, they do this to promote their own global microbrand, but you know, they're providing content that's valuable to you know, the greater blogosphere, the greater web, and news sites and aggregators like TechMeme. So I'll just finish. So the point of all this is you're not gonna advertise on TV or in magazines your global microbrand. You have to create stuff that's valuable to people, that people want to link to and talk about. And so, you know, like a lot of these examples, like a lot of the people on this panel who've all appeared on TechMe, even though they're not, you know, dedicated to reporting tech news. They don't break tech news, but the stuff they cover is definitely bumps up against tech news. And so, you know, create stuff that people first want to repeat. You know, that's all the TechMeme does is repeat news. Create stuff that people want to kind of take off on, add to, augment, champion. and maybe put stuff out there that people want to attack or bash. You know, it's you know, the most cynical version of which is like link baiting, but you know, it's controversy can be great to your global micro brand. That's all.
which is an excellent segue. And can you push number two?
No, three. Isn't she three? Yeah, she's three. There you go. You're on.
You on?
Oh, she needs power.
She needs power. She's that alone right here. Doing double duty as an electrician.
I tell you.
You should be up. Kathy, with some tips on how to grow our personal micro brands. Is it? Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Ruby.
Thank you. Is this one working?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to give some ideas and tips on how to do this. I was inspired by you to start my blog. I guess it's been just over 2 years.
Now she has a higher Technorati ranking than me, and I hate her. I hate her.
I know.
No, I'm just kidding.
Secretly, you don't know.
I know.
Actually, the big moment for me was when my blog had a higher Technorati ranking than my publisher, Tim O'Reilly's Radar blog. Because that changed everything. You know, the book deal that I have with them changed dramatically when that happened. So I wouldn't have even started this if I hadn't actually lost my job at Sun. And, you know, now I can't imagine going back. So some of the tips that I have, I don't follow a lot of the rules that you're supposed to do. So some of the things I say might even kind of disagree with what Hugh does. People have been successful doing some of the things that I'm going to say not to do, including like Tara Hunt and Hugh and Robert Scoble. So people will say, well, you know, Tara does this, she gets away with it, or Hugh does this, Scoble does this, they're real successful. And I just always say, well, you know, I'm not Hugh, and neither are you, and I'm not Tara, and I'm not Robert Scoble. So what I have, people come to me all the time, literally every single day, and say, how come people aren't reading my blog? Or what can I do to, you know, get people over to my blog? Thank you. You get this a lot too.
Yep.
So this is my solution. So these are the Global Microbrand 7 virtues. And I'll explain each one of these a little bit, but it's be grateful and humble and patient and brave. Show respect. Be generous. Spelling isn't a part of it. Be generous.
Don't worry about spelling.
Right, that has nothing to do with it. Be motivating. Okay, be grateful. This is probably the single most important one. Every moment that people give us just the tiniest bit of attention to read our blog, we're so incredibly lucky. That is such a gift. So 55 million blogs. Now, I know 90% of them are the teenage girls. But there are an awful lot of blogs, and for someone to spend, you know, even 30 seconds looking at my blog. So I never stop being grateful. How many of you read my blog? I love you guys. So I appreciate it more than you could possibly imagine. It's really a gift, and everything that I do is driven by that because I know it's a gift. And the day that I start forgetting that, is the day that my Technorati ranking is going to go down. So I'm really grateful. I'm really appreciative that you're there. I know how many blogs I can read per day. It's not very many. So I know that you can't either. So being humble, this is another one that a lot of people violate, but I'm probably not able to. Oh, I'll tell you, that's coming up. Being humble, when I go and look at someone's blog, that says, why am I not getting any readers? I'll look at it and I'll say, well, you know, it's all about you. And not that you're not interesting, but it's all about you. And that's not really giving something back to the people who are giving you your attention or giving you their attention as a gift. So I think about, you know, our philosophy in our books, my partner and I create the Head First series of books, is that our job is to make people feel better about themselves in a legitimate way, not better about us, but better about themselves. So it's not going to help if we talk about how much we rock. We want people to think about how much they rock. So this is kind of the trick question. I know a lot of you guys have seen this. Which would you rather hear in a user's product review? The product is brilliant or the company is brilliant? And of course, secret answer C is that you want the reader to say they're brilliant. So part of giving a gift to someone is, I'm not going to say how great we are, how great our books are, how great our blog is. It's about helping you so that you can be more brilliant and that you can do something better. Being patient. I know there are a lot of people who say, well, okay, I want to start a blog and then I want to monetize it. And we never thought about anything like that. We just thought, let's just build the blog. Let's just give whatever we can give to people. Let's help people and give them information that's helpful. Respect the gift of attention by giving them something back and just see what happens. But it is a patient thing. I don't think you can do that overnight. It took, I don't know, how long did it take me to climb over the top of you, Hugh? Probably.
About, I don't know, maybe a year, year and a half, maybe.
Yeah, I was patient. I knew it would happen.
It was worth it, though.
I was waiting for that line.
Okay.
I'm glad he said.
Be brave. This is a tricky one. Now, really early on, I read Hugh's blog when he was making kind of his transition. And, you know, how many of you have seen Hugh's blog? Yeah, okay. So, you know, he uses raw language sometimes and themes. And he was talking about getting business. And I remember there was a woman who wrote in his comments, well, you know, Hugh, if you didn't use words like this or if you didn't make inappropriate comments, you know, you might have more customers. And Hugh said, well, those aren't the clients that I want then, if that's a problem for them. And that really stuck for me. I definitely have had to grow a little bit thicker skin because as your blog or your global micro brand becomes more popular, well, then the critics are going to come out. And they can be really, really, really brutal. Shockingly brutal. So I think you have to be brave for about, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 months after I got completely slammed by a huge group of people online. I started pulling back on the things that I said. I started not following my own advice, and that was a real bad idea. So when I finally decided, you know, no, I have to at least take my own advice, that helped. So you have a great idea, and then fear happens. So being brave, if you're doing something that people are going to love, obviously some people are going to hate it. And, you know, this is Don Norman's kind of classic statement from a few years ago, that if some people don't hate what you're doing, then it is mediocre. So now you don't want everyone to hate what you're doing, but...
I do.
Some people are going to.
Yeah.
And showing respect. I think showing respect is about recognizing that the value of the time that you all give me is really worth a lot. So if I go to the extra trouble of making a picture, or Hugh makes his cartoons, or if I'm making a graph, or some sort of chart, or something I can give back, that's respecting the time that you've given me. So if I just sat there and wrote, you know, about my horses, which I occasionally do, that would not be respecting your time. And in fact, as many readers as I have, we had a blizzard in Colorado, as a lot of you know, and I wrote 2 little teeny posts in a row about it. And I almost never write anything personal. And I wrote 2 posts in a row, and it had cute little pictures and everything. And sure enough, in my comments, people were saying, yeah, that's nice. I'm sure that's cute. But, you know, what does this have to do with creating passionate users? And can we get back on track? So that really taught me a lesson I need to pay attention to respecting what people are coming there to see. You know, giving people superpowers, something that they can use, that's a way, that's a reflection of the gift that people are giving me by reading, if I can give them something back. And so really, to me, that's about, you know, giving away whatever knowledge I have. So anything that I get paid to do, it's the stuff I'm giving away on the blog as well. So people write to me and say, I would like to deliver the same presentation that you're delivering, you know, internal to my company. They'll write to me and I'll send them slides. I'll give them help. I'll do whatever I can. Companies will try to hire me for some amount of money. I'll say, I will come to your company. I won't charge you, but you have to commit and tell me that you're absolutely going to take this seriously. So trying to give things away, trying to tell people, how you do what you do is a great way to do that. So we recommend that people do a learning blog. If you can teach someone how to do something, how to do anything, and you can give them good advice, they're not coming there for your opinions. They're coming there to learn something that they can actually take away and use and be better at whatever they do. And that's our whole focus. So we give away as much as we possibly can. And then just, you know, being inspirational and motivational. A lot of times, it's really funny to me because people will say, oh, I took this post and I took this graph and I took it to my company and said, well, look, this is what Kathy Sierra said. And of course, the funny thing is when I worked at Sun, nobody cared what Kathy Sierra said at all. But, it's the outside expert syndrome that is, if someone else is saying it, then it's more meaningful. So a lot of times my job is just to put something that someone else really wants to say, put a picture to it, take the time to articulate it in a way that they want to, and then now they get to show that someone else said it. And then, of course, we're really all about talking to the brain, not the mind. And so we try to give you things to keep your attention, and pictures is a great way to do that. So the bottom line is don't blog about your cat. But the other one... This, to me, this is probably the single biggest one I see by people who are kind of on their way or wanting to be A-listers, is it's just a stream of who they had lunch with and who they had dinner with and who they were at the party. And I bet if I go back and look at the South by Southwest posts from a lot of the bloggers here, it'll be about who they partied with and who they had a great conversation with. And you won't see any of that from me, although Hugh did make me a special cartoon, and I'm going to blog it. But... So that's my that'll be my one
just
chance
don't plug
to name
the other
drop.
One.
Yeah, and then one that I
there's only one
show.
Yes.
So you know that would not be meaningful. That would not be respecting your time or giving you a gift if I was telling you all the cool people who I got to hang out with. That's just useless to you. So that's my advice, and the people I know who've taken it have actually been pretty successful. And if you write to me and say why am I not getting any readers? I'm going to use this as a checklist. So if I come to your blog and I see that you're talking all about yourself and who you had lunch with and who you did this with, I'll give you a hard time about it. And I have one little story about someone else who started a global micro brand is my roommate, who's a horse trainer. And horse training, of course, does not scale. And she started a blog and she started helping people with all kinds of horse tips and tricks. And now she has clients all over the world because she can sell them DVDs with training on it. And then, of course, she's gotten all kinds of local clients as well. So anyway, thanks to you for the whole idea.
Hooray.
Yay.
I think that's a great point about the blog. I call the blog as the resume. I get asked my resume. I said, just read my blog. But that you're going to by necessity, piss some people off who could be potential clients. But the flip side of that is I'm doing some work with Alex over there for a client down in Miami, and he told me that one of the main reasons he hired me is because he does read my blog. So, there's a flip side to that. We do have a microphone over there for questions, and I wanted to let folks, just go and get over there. So why don't we get started? Go right ahead.
This is for Kathy, but for the entire panel, just related to the question that was asked over here. How do you go about demonstrating that you're grateful, perhaps besides just responding to comments? What are some ways that you show you're thankful?
Well, if somebody leaves a really nice comment on my blog, sometimes I'll quote it. And it doesn't have to be anybody who's like, I don't know, A-lister or whatever. It's just kind of, I think readers can tell whether you find their readers interesting or not, if that makes any sense. I'm really bad at responding to comments in the comment section. I wish I was better, but every now and then, you try to be nice. I think on the same token, I don't put up with trolls. If somebody's like some loser in a cube is being passive aggressive on my blog, I tell him to go fuck himself. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
No, and just
did,
to follow.
Did you do that this morning?
Yes.
When you say you quoted them, you mean you quoted them in a follow-up post?
Yeah, I could do that. Or, I always do things like if somebody leaves a URL and they say, hey, Sammy in the comments in the previous post said this. Oh, here's his blog. And he said this. And then, oh, here's what he does. And, oh, by the way, I think it's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't – the great thing about being a blogger with fairly, pretty good amount of readers, is you get all these interesting people just dropping themselves on your lap and you're learning so much from them. And I think if you just kind of, if you acknowledge the, I think you're better off linking to people who read your blog than you are linking to, Scoble or Hugh McLeod or Kathy. No offense. But you link to them too if you want. I mean, like Kathy, there's a reason why she, her traffic's high because it's bloody good. And, you try writing stuff that good, that often, that quickly. Go ahead, try it hard. I think you should, just say nice things about people who read your comments, and if they have a blog, link to them as often as you can.
Okay. I'd love to hear what the other people on the panel have to say, and just a quick thing related to that, because I think Hugh, probably part of the reason you don't, this is just speculation, but respond to every comment is you just don't have the time. And so how do you give back without reaching an overload point? I mean,
with great difficulty. I have a small wine company which I have an interest in, and I won't tell the name of it because I don't want to. Yeah, and what happened was we started putting stuff out in blogs. We started giving out wine to bloggers with no stipulation, just saying, I'm writing about this wine Stormhook that I'm working on, and I want I want the people reading my blogs to think it's real. This is not vinegar. It's actually pretty good stuff. And so I said, anyone who wants a bottle who's a blogger can have one. You don't have to be an influencer. That's what Microsoft did with their Vista, and that was a big mistake. I said, anyone who's had a blog for who's legal drinking age, who's been blogging for a minimum of 3 months can have it. And they don't have to write anything about it. I just wanted to put it out there so people know it's real. And then we did a lot of other things. We started sponsoring geek dinners. So, anyone here ever threw a geek dinner, in their town? Right. So we said the thing. If any bloggers having a geek dinner, let me know and I'll send you a couple cases over. And, as a way of, it would have been nice if, people took photographs of it and put it on Flickr and stuff. We got all this kind of, PR, but it wasn't really about that. It was much more about, we're in the wine business and these are the people we like, and so we want to start a conversation with them, and we firmly believe that if we do that, good things will happen down the road. And it started working almost too well, because put in perspective, when I started working for Stormhook in 2 years ago, we were selling 40,000 cases a year. 40,000 cases. Okay? Right. We sold 40,000 cases last week. Okay? It works.
So go buy wine.
Yeah, you don't have to. I don't know, but it's what happens is I get busier. Okay, so when I was doing, I think some of my best writing, I was pretty underemployed because I was having a bad year, and then all of a sudden I'm doing this Stormhook stuff and I'm busier than hell. And I think you have to explain that. You have to explain their relationship to your readers.
I'm going to answer that one too.
Okay.
I love the fact that I get lots of comments on my blog because it's very interesting, but it's been quite some time since I've been able to keep up with the comments. So that is a problem. But what I meant about respecting that gift is that I'm trying to respect people's time with the posts that I make. So even things like the reason that I do pictures, and I'm no cartoonist or artist, but I do those graphs so that people can get the whole idea without even actually having to read the post. 90% of it is always in those pictures. You can just look at the picture, get the idea, read the caption, that's it. So it's respecting the that your time is very limited. Also, early on, people were always saying, oh, you've got to post all the time. You've got to keep posting. You've got to keep that coming. Well, I don't do that. And sometimes I've gone 2 weeks without posting, like the last 2 weeks. If I'm busy and I don't think I can add value, I'm not going to clutter up your feed reader. I hope that more and more people are subscribing instead of showing up there every day. But it's really about just respecting your time by trying to put quality up there instead of just trying to put posts up there. Does that help?
Yeah, no, it's great.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hello, Tara.
Hello. First of all, I have to say, I think you guys are all brilliant in your own ways and have created tools that are brilliant and blogs with amazing information in it that I get so much out of it. Hugh is one of my early heroes. Gaping Void was something that I really enjoyed before I even had a blog. So very much like Kathy inspired me. But, one of the things that I think is really problematic is, and this keeps leaking into other parts of our lives is this whole idea of volume being, important. The idea that we are in the Technorati top 100 or, this whole A-lister thing, you're reading obsessively, you're reading, your stats, seeing how much you're growing, et cetera. And I would be lying if I'm not concerned about that. But there was a point, and I think I wrote a post about this, and no offense to you, Gabe, because I read tech meme every day, but there was a point at which I let go of the tech meme drug. And we talked about this. I think David talked about this and alluded to it in a joke earlier on in the panel. Mm-hmm. Was that, you read tech meme and this is how you can drive traffic to your blog, right? So you read it and then you talk about it on your blog and you just keep adding to this echo chamber. And yes, you're getting, lots of traffic and more readers. But I found the more readers that I got, the less quality relationships that I was able to keep up. And once I let go of that drug, once I let go of the numbers and caring about that, I actually found, I slipped off of the, from Technorati top 2000 to into oblivion now, but my business is stronger. I'm happier. I just find that, as far as the relationships go, they're just much more quality. I wonder, If any of you.
Oh yeah. Before I start working with Stormbook, one of my guy who lives in my village up in England is a guy called Thomas, and he's arguably one of the top 6 or 12 tailors in the world. So does anybody want to spend $10,000 or $6,000 on a suit? Okay.
Good.
Talk to me afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's made for the Prince of Wales. Anyone remember Roxy Music videos? He cut suits for Brian Ferry. That's how cool he is. Okay, he's made suits for. Put it this way, off the record, like John Vizzoni, who's a chief designer for Purple Label, Ralph Lauren. He wears Thomas's stuff. He doesn't wear Purple Label, or maybe he wears Purple Label, but so he's a really good tailor. Okay, and so I built him a blog, And also we had this kind of tailoring blog, okay, and it had a happy ending because his business tripled inside 6 months, which is a pretty good ROI for a $300 piece of software. Actually the software was free. It was just getting the guy to install it cost the money. And, now he is gone from from business slow till every time he makes a suit, he gets three more orders for suits. In other words, thank you for making a suit. Can I buy three more, sir? Thank you for making the suit. Can I have three more? And so we got a 6 month waiting list just to get on the waiting list. And the reason he has is because he's got this really brilliant blog called English Cut, which he writes. And the thing is, he never checks his Technorati rankings. He doesn't check. He doesn't have track bags. He doesn't give a fig about Robert Scoble or Hugh McLeod. He likes me a little bit, but he doesn't care about the Technorati mafia, okay, or tech meme. I don't think he's ever read tech meme. Sorry, Gabe. But he makes suits. Now, what he does care about is making the best suits in the world and his customers. And I think the thing is, what I'm talking about here, when I talk about the global micro brand, I'm not just talking about consultants with blogs, okay? I'm talking about people also who make products as well. And I think sometimes when we talk about the blog world, a lot of the stuff we're selling is a wee bit creative knowledge worker kind of stuff. And what excites me is when tailors or pizza people or winemakers start using it successfully, not just techies and bloggers and Macintosh users,
I think just one part of it is that it's not about reaching the most people. It's about reaching the right people.
And, yeah, that's a very good point.
You know, it might not be all that important for you to be in the Technorati top 100 if, for example, with English Cut, so he's trying to reach maybe 500 people in the entire world.
Yeah, exactly.
So that if his daily traffic or his weekly traffic is 500 page views, that's or 500 uniques, that's fine.
Yeah, if you've got 500 uniques and 10% of them want to buy a suit, we're already swamped. Mm-hmm. However, to think about Tara's example, you know, when she about the same time you started blogging seriously, you moved to the West Coast from Toronto, is that right? And you're trying to establish yourself, right? And when we started English Cut, you know, we wanted customers, and so. You know, we you know, checked our Technorati, we checked our rankings, we checked all the things, you know, we, you know, blah, 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 blah. But then once we got the business, well, actually, we had a new problem, not finding customers, but actually making the stuff. And so maybe, you know, your transition came when you realized, all right, now people know who I am. Holy shit, I've got 5 clients. Now I've actually got to work for a living. Uh-oh. And maybe, because it seems like that, I remember that post you talked about. I'm imagining, that blog post you wrote was about the same time you started kind of, you know, finding your feet with Citizen Agency. I don't think that was coincidental. Am I off the record? How off the scale am I with that?
Yourself, right?
Right. No, I think what happens is you see somebody like, I don't know, like we're going to say Robert Scoble or Michael Arrington or these people who make, you know, I know Michael Arrington makes a good deal of money from his blog TechCrunch, and you know, for us mere mortals, have to schlep to the glass office building of death in the city every day, and you know. Kind of,
I used to work there.
Yeah, kind of pander for our little insecure, kind of paranoid little dickless boss guy. What? No one's ever had a paranoid dickless boss guy?
Tell us what you really think.
No. Well, I used to work in advertising on Madison Avenue, and it was just utterly horrendous. No, he makes a lot. What happens? He makes a lot of money. Something like Arrington makes a lot of money, and you're going, "Oh, he makes a lot of money. Why can't I make a lot of money? I must go do what he does. Oh, he's number 5 in Technorati. I just must be in the top 5 of Technorati." But actually, if you do what Michael Arrington's doing, most likely you will fail, because he's just doing what he does, and that's what you should be doing, and find your own path. So that's what I think.
Did you want to add to that? No.
I was just going to say, an interesting thing that happens sometimes is when you forget about the metrics and you find your own voice and find your own footing. Sometimes,
sorry.
sometimes you end up doing well on the metrics after all. I've read from multiple people that they stopped caring about tech meme and in the end do better on tech meme. So,
that's, I totally believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mr. Overkirk.
I wanted to have you guys talk a little bit about the different kinds of success you can have with a global micro brand. You know, we've talked about, and this makes it very persuasive for companies who have budgets, ROI, you can sell more stuff or attention that can accrue. You can have more readers. You can get invited to speak. But for me, one of the most interesting aspects is just the very personal one-to-one connections you might make with people who are like you all over the world, right? Like, I have a buddy, David Parmet, because I read Hugh McLeod's blog about this PR guy who was out of work and needed a gig, and he's smart, go check his blog out. And so we're friends now as a result of that. That's enriched my life, and that's been a wonderful thing that's been an outcome of your blog. So I wonder if each of you has personal instances like that about connections that you made, things that, you know, they're small, they're tiny victories that really mean a great deal, and they come through this kind of global micro-branding practice.
Sure. Start down there.
Kathy?
Come on,
Kathy. The few things that I have blogged personally, or one of them is that, because I tend to almost never blog personally, I have a seizure disorder. It's part of my big interest in the brain. And almost, a little over a year ago, things really started to deteriorate. And I made a couple posts about things deteriorating, And there was a reader who, and I'd been to, you know, every neurologist in the state of Colorado, I think, and California. And there was a reader who wrote in about, actually wrote to me personally in an email about something else that I could try, and a new kind of medication, because I was also really struggling with that. And I'm sure I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that right now. I would be alive, but I couldn't put two neurons together. So it really rebuilt me over the last year. And that would never have happened. So that was a major, personal life victory. And then, you know, just all the other friends. I live out on a little farm and almost never, you know, now that I'm not in Sun, I have no contact with anyone. And all the people that I know in the tech field that work in Colorado, we only meet like here at conferences. Or
yeah.
I see them here, but nowhere else.
This, similar to what Brian said, David over here was reading a blog reader of mine, and he left some nice comments, and very nice of you, I thought at the time. And then, like Brian said, he lost his job and blogged about it. And so I wrote, hey, David's out of a job. Somebody hired, I think it was like, somebody hired Dave Parmet, damn it, was the title of the blog post. And then I said, David, who reads my blog, leaves comments, is now at work, here's the link. Somebody go hire him. And I don't know if that led to any inquiries. But then what happened with the English cut meme with the suits, we started traveling service where Thomas the tailor would visit New York hotels. And if you wanted a $5,000 suit or whatever, you'd turn up to his hotel, he'd measure you up, and then he'd go back to London 3 months later, come back with your suit. And so we wanted some PR for that. And I knew nothing about PR, but I knew this guy called Dave, who I, you know, helped out. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, would you mind, we could use a bit of help in New York, you know, because could you help us out in New York? And he said, well, okay. I said, you know, I might be interested in this because I've always had a Joneses for those English suits that Brian Ferry wore in the videos. And I said, that's really great because Brian Ferry, what his suits used to be, you know, Thomas is made for Brian Ferry. I mean, he knows that kind of suit. And so Dave went, cool. And then, so the next thing you know is, David's kind of, pounding the pavement on English Cut's behalf. And we got on the fashion style Bible for the New York Times about 3 months later or something silly like that. And so, and that pretty much tipped the and all of a sudden we were taken seriously. All those kind of American suit geeks went, okay, this guy's in the Times. He is the real deal. He's not just some kind of fantasy tailor blogger who just, you know, because, yeah, he's actually the real deal. And that was just a nice bit of karma. And also, but I think, and you might want to confirm this. And then the next thing you know, Robert Scoble and Shel Israel are writing a book. Which a lot of people in the business marketing field read. And they talk about Thomas, me, and David hooking up together. And so David's like, this is how I interpret it.
Cell phone violation.
Okay. What happened to David when we'd be talking to people, they go, oh yeah, you're the suit guy, did all that PR for Thomas. Oh, I've heard of you. Yeah. Why don't you come on in, as opposed to who the hell are you, go away.
Where's your suit?
Yeah. Yeah. And people come up to you and say, how come you're not wearing a suit?
Yeah.
And so now
it's at the dry cleaners.
Yeah. So now you have a little hook to hang your coat on, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. No, but basically it was kind of like we were all being kind of, mutually generous to each other. Yeah. Now, did you meet Alex through, how did Alex meet you? I mean, basically karma, what goes around comes around. And I think if you do karmically nice things, good things will happen eventually. And I like to, one thing I like is, because of the blogosphere, I live in a world where good things happen to good people and nothing happens to bad people. And I quite like that.
So switching to talking about my own brand for a moment, when I launched my tech site in September of 2005, I was reading, you know, a bunch of blogs that I found useful, and I had a lot of respect and admiration for the people writing them. And over time, I think every such case with every single one of those people have said they found my site useful, and they enjoy it and find it good, and that's a personal success for me. And the last of which was Hugh McLeod, who I met last night and had good things to say. So happy about that.
For me, it's just meeting guys like Brian and Hugh and all the other folks we hung out with in Vegas last week. And I think another just important thing for me is I frequently pander by throwing up pictures of my kids on my blog. And my wife is in business for herself, and I've since gone into business for myself. And I work out of the house. And if my kids can grow up with this notion, and they're 7 and 4, that – when you get out of college, you don't have to go work in the big glass building of death for Mr. Dickless. I think if I could convince those my three children of that, then all of this will have been worth it, because I will have saved the next generation from corporate slavery. So,
Dickless death.
Yeah.
Oh, sir. Oh, so one question. Can I understand there's a fellow in here who's an artist. His name is John T. Younger.
Yes, the original Michael Brown.
Right. Yeah, and he's an artist. You live in like Michigan? Yeah, I know, but you live in Michigan somewhere.
Yeah.
He makes these wonderful, kind of burning thing. Big iron works. You kind of big kind of bowls, and you set them on fire, you whatever. And you've been, has that helped your business a lot, all this stuff?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Well, you and I are similar. I'm a cartoonist, and the thing is, when I was let's go back 2 years, when I was living in the boonies of England in Cumbria, where I was living, you know, $25,000 to $35,000 a year is a very comfortable living wage, and I could do what I was doing for very little money. As opposed to living in a loft in Tribeca or a loft in London or Paris or San Francisco, which removed a lot of financial pressure off me, so I could actually build the business organically. English cuts run out of Cumbria as well, and our rent's about £200, about $350 a month, versus a small shop in Savile Row, which is about $80,000 a year. And you know, so being with blogs is such a great way to keep costs down for me that. And I feel the cheaper you can do it, the more freedom you'll have and the better long-term efforts you'll have. So glad it worked out. I'm just glad it all worked out for you, the whole blogging thing. So
yeah.
Well done. Sir.
Yes, sir.
I just want to say I've been reading you all a long time, and I'm admirers of everybody on the panel. And I get a kick. I mean, I think a lot of us do this. We come to something like this, and I'm lucky enough I live here so I can sleep in my own bed and then – come in here.
Can you give me a ride back to my hotel later?
Sure. Yeah.
Great.
So it's a kick for me because you come to know people,
mm-hmm.
And in some cases, if you don't comment, it's a one-way relationship. Like I come to know Hugh's drawings, or I come to know Kathy's thoughts about users and so on. But then you can actually come together with people, and you figure out that you have these commonalities, which I think when you're in Cube Land, you can forget that there's people out there who aren't stifled by bureaucracy. They're not, you know, dead set on doing it the way they've always done it. They'd rather find a smarter way to do it and so on. And I was going to say, I'm a parent like you, and I'd love to show my kids, you know, a better way. And Kathy, what you were saying about your health issues, I think resonates with what you were talking about, which is a good reminder to me because I keep a little, you know, little blog for my friends mostly. It's not about how often you publish, but you know that your time's precious. You know that your health is precious. You don't know how long, you know, any of us get to do this. So do it at a high level of quality that means something to people. And if you have to cuss to get people's, you know, to understand how serious you are, or to express yourself, and go ahead and do it. The thing that I was going to say is that I appreciate what has come out of the panel, because I see so many people making the mistake of thinking, you know, I'll climb Technorati rung by rung because I'm going to be like Arrington, or I'm going to be like Scoble, or whatever. And it's the same. It's a different version of the same glass tower, right?
You're gonna
copy somebody else who is real good at working in a cubicle and get to salary X or whatever. And I was thinking about this because a while back I wrote on my blog, I found these two quotes like within 2 days of each other, and I was amazed that these two people said the same thing. The first one was from Jerry Garcia, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it right here. And he said, at first you worry about being like somebody else, copying somebody else, and eventually you get your own sound and you figure out that it only works to do your own thing anyway, because that's all people will buy into. And the other quote that was a lot like it said, stop worrying about being the best at what you do and try instead to become the only one who even does what you do. And I was interested because that quote came from Shaquille O'Neal.
Wow.
And I thought that y'all have all done a good job of being like Jerry Garcia or like Shaquille O'Neal or whatever, to the point that in this community, when you say, oh, Kathy Sierra wrote, your brand is your name, or Human Cloud had this cartoon, and people will know what that is just because of the brand you've established for yourself. So I think you've done a great job. And well, all of that's just to say, y'all are awesome.
No, thank you. No, I have to say, you go back like 2 or 3 years. Great. You go back 2 or 3 years when, you know, I was just doing this. It was, you know, David and I and Kathy and these people and Jeff Jarvis, and all started hitting critical mass. It was a very, very exciting time for us because, you know, we'd spent, some of us, 3, 4, 5 years writing this stuff in relatively obscure conditions. And then we had the big, you know, we had the big article in Business Week 2 years ago, and all of a sudden, you know, the next thing you know, hey, this might be real, guys. And certainly I'm in a position right now where I get to write what I want. I get to do what I want. I have the readers I want. I have a pretty good life. And I'm like, you know, I'm very grateful for that. And I would like, every time I see somebody else make a go of it and do a good job of it and transform their careers and kind of, it makes me really happy because it's not just about me and my friends. It's about, I want everybody to have a global micro brand because jobs, I'm sorry, real jobs do suck, you know, and I've had too many of them. And the more people who can find something remarkable that comes from them and nobody else, and they can express it to the world, and the world can say, yes, thank you, we love you, then the happier this world's going to be. And so it's not just about, you know, Michael Arrington and Scoble and my, you know, it's about everybody. And the more people who can succeed, the happier I am and the more powerful this will be, and the less we'll need glass boxes of death, which I think are appalling things.
I have something to add to that one. Those are great quotes. I always try to take that one step further. So the quote about, you know, don't worry about being the best, try to be the only one at what you do. So I always try to flip that and say, okay, my job is to help someone else be really kick-ass at what they do, or maybe help them be the only person who does what they do. So as long as I'm taking most of the focus off myself, so it's kind of funny for me to be I know my name now is associated as kind of a global micro brand, but that's really funny for me because it's not what I tried to do. If you look at my blog, my name is not, it's not on the front page anywhere. I mean, it's at the very bottom of my post. It'll say posted by Kathy Sierra. It's not the Kathy Sierra blog. There's not even a subtitle that says, you know, creating passionate users, Kathy Sierra's blog. You know, if you look on the about page, you'll see me there with other people, even though I post 99.9% of the posts, but I didn't want it to be about me because it's about helping other people.
But that's where your power comes from.
I don't like public speaking either, so I know that's kind of surprising now, but so I didn't want to be the person that ended up in this role. I mean, I'm happy now because I obviously am helping reach more people with that message, and that's what's rewarding to me. But yeah, I'm trying to think about how to help other people do this.
Right.
Chris?
Yeah, first want to thank what you guys have said so far. I really think that what Kathy's saying about helping other people is really important. I find that the more that I can, you know, actually using your words, help other people kick ass, the better I do myself and the better I feel about things. I did want to sort of share an anecdote about the way that I started blogging. It was actually in Paris. Well, I had actually been blogging for a little while, but it started really in Paris at Les Blog.
I was there.
What's that? Yeah, that's right.
That was the guy behind you.
That was very, very shortly after Tara and I got together. I had basically taken this approach to blogging that I needed to make every post really articulate, that I had to sound really, really smart, whether or not I am or not, and put things out there in such a way that I was unable to be attacked, you know, that everything that I said was, you know, watertight. And, you know, I'd gone out one night drinking heavily with Tom Raftery and some folks, as you can imagine. Yeah. Didn't feel so good the next morning. But what he did tell me, which I thought was really powerful and really useful, you know, was to stop thinking about having an audience, was to stop thinking about, you know, writing to thousands of people, which the web kind of does, and instead to think about three or four people that you're actually writing to as though you're writing email. I've actually heard that other people start composing their blog posts in email just so that it feels more comfortable and more natural. And I think that once I sort of abandon these ideas of writing to any large audience, because I, you know, whatever, I'm just interested in having those conversations one-on-one.
Oops.
Yeah.
I know.
And you gave John a hard time.
Mr. McLeod will be taking you to detention.
Tisk, tisk.
Yeah.
Anyways, once I basically, you know, drew it back to cell phone-based conversations, you know, one-on-one type things, I was able to get a lot more out of it personally. And I think that I was able to actually speak with a much clearer voice. The second thing that I just wanted to say, I used to work at a startup called Flock. And while I was there, it sort of dawned on me, you know, the work that I'm doing there really starts to represent me. The people that I choose to work for are a reflection of my values and what I care about. And I wrote a post called I Represent Me. And it was really sort of a realization of my independence, because it wasn't so much that I was working for Flock and, you know, thank God they've hired me and who am I amongst the sea of things, but it's that my contributions to them really determine what they're going to be like in the end. And once Flock stopped representing me and my goals and my values, I left. And that's when we started Citizen Agency. And so I think it's really important to always be authentic and genuine to where you come from and what's important to you. And again, to sort of start.
Quick question for you, Chris.
Yeah.
Do you not I always think the best way to get approval is not to need it. And sounds like you went through that process.
Yeah. I mean, basically, I sort of realized that I had to give myself permission to sort of go after what I felt was really valuable to me and what, you know, really represented me. And since I've done that, I think I've been a lot more successful, and I've helped a lot of other people, I think, find their success through helping them give themselves permission to pursue the same things.
A lot of letting go involved, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So we have one more question, and then we'll just wrap it up. Alex.
Yeah, I know we're running out of time. I lost my voice last night, so bear with me. I won't take much time. Thanks a lot for coming. This is great. Hugh, you said that blogging is the best way to make something indirect happen to you.
Yeah, blogs are a great way of making things happen indirectly.
Right. And I think picking up on what you said earlier, it's about commonalities. Every time you blog, you're putting out stuff there that other people can grab onto. And Twitter is kind of the same way. When you say, I'm going to such and such bar, or I just read this, other people can hang on to that. And this is kind of what social object is about. And
yeah, you've
been
social
talking
objects.
About that as well. So I wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah. By the way, everybody Google social object. It's the future of marketing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Basically. I had this idea. I had this realization that I did this cartoon, I don't know, a couple years ago that said, if you talk to people the way advertising people talk to people, they'd punch you in the face. And then, you know, when I go to a party, right, I don't go up to a girl and go, hi, my name's Hugh, this is my sexual history, would you like to go to bed? Well, I haven't done that recently.
Skip the second.
Yeah, okay. what happens when you start conversations is you say, hey, what do you think, it was raining outside, or here, have a peanut, or peanut, or what do you think of the ball game, or come, you know, the way you talk to people when you open up a conversation is actually rather random. And you don't go, hi, my name is Hugh McLeod, and I am a consultant for all your total quality value needs. You don't talk to people that way. What you do is you kind of start spreading stuff out. You just go, hey, what's up? And it's almost the way, and when we were doing, you know, the Stormhook thing. Okay. One thing I do on my blog, which I'm actually, you know, sorry, quite proud of, is I started publishing my cartoons in high resolution. Okay. In other words, you can download them, and if you read my thing, you can print them out. They're big enough, they're high resolution enough to be printed out, right? And yeah, I sell t-shirts, I sell business cards, I sell mugs. But you know what? If you want to just download them and take them to Kinko's or put them up onto Cafe Press, go right ahead. Because you've taken the time to read my stuff, and I want you to enjoy it and the fact that you've taken the time to, you know, take my cartoons off the web and put them on a t-shirt, that's worth far more to me than, you know, what the $4 profit I'd get if I got it off Cafe Press. I'd rather have the very fact that is, you know, quote unquote free means you're more likely to take it, hang it up in your cubicle or put it on a t-shirt or put it on your business card, and you're going to tell 100 people, hey, look what I got out of you. And that's, and maybe one of them is in the suit business, or maybe one of them wants to buy a suit. So that kind of, and there's a guy called Yuri Engstrom, a Finnish guy, used to work for Nokia, who's completely brilliant, by the way. If you ever get to meet him, lucky you. Anthropologist who coined this phrase, social object. And I think you know him too. Where instead of saying, here's why you should buy Hugh McLeod cartoon products for your total cartoon needs. Imagine yourself wearing this t-shirt now. You just say, what you're doing is you're just saying, here, well, this is me. Please take it. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to, shall we say, market your product via blog, try to create social objects. Things that people can not only have for free without friction, but they can give to their friends and share. Hey, look what Alex gave me. Hey, look at this. I mean, even a photograph on your blog of your fireball, right? If somebody thinks it's cool, okay, he's gonna put it on his blog or email it to his friend. Hey, look at this. Check out this guy, John T. Younger, who's making this stuff. Because what's really important are two things. One is we have an inherent need to bond with our fellow creatures. And the second thing is this whole kind of new blog-enabled global microbrand marketing thing is not about technology. It's not about marketing. It's about love. We're doing this here today because we love people. We love each other. And we want to love more. And we want the things around us that make us easier to love other people and return love and get love back in return. So love is the future, and Google's social object. That's my opinion.
Okay, and we're being waved at, so
thank you. Thanks for coming.
I think that's a good way to end it.
Yeah.